All right, good evening, everybody. We will go ahead and call this meeting of the Board of Directors, Upper San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District to order. It is 4 p.m. on February 28th. We'll begin with a Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Hazenkamp, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Head over your heart.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
I forgot. I was at the college board. I was asked to do it. I forgot.
You forgot the first one. How do you start?
Where do you begin?
And directors, just a reminder, turn on your microphones so we can pick it up on the recording.
Thank you. All right. We'll continue with a roll call of board of directors. Vanessa.
Director Trevino.
Present.
Director Chavez. Director Garcia.
Present.
Vice President Fellow.
Here.
President Santana.
Here. All right. We have a quorum with four directors present. Moving on to adoption of the agenda. And at this time, I'm going to pass it on over to Stephen O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to add something to the agenda pursuant to the Brown Act provision that allows an addition to the agenda that arose subsequent to the posting of the agenda. As you know, the agenda was posted 72 hours before this meeting, and subsequent to that time, my office and district staff have received a letter concerning some potential litigation that I think warrants a closed session discussion. So it's I'd recommend that the board adopt a motion to add to our agenda at section 14, Government Code Section 54956, conference with legal counsel concerning potential litigation, one case. And that would require a separate motion to add that to the agenda, and then we'd be able to convene in closed session if that takes place.
Motion to approve.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second to add an item to the agenda. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? All right, that passes on a 4-0.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to item 4, public comments. Do we have any public comment today?
Good afternoon, Madam President. We have not received any written public comments prior to this meeting. However, if anyone wishes to speak now, they may do so at the podium.
All right. Seeing none, we will move on to item 5, committee reports. We do have the three committee reports in our agenda. Do we have any other comments regarding those committee reports? Appointments. I'm so sorry. Yes, I was going to mention that.
And I didn't notice that either, President Santana.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that, Tom. Committee appointments for 2024. I was going to mention something, so that's good that it's here on the agenda. We are going to keep the committee appointments that, as they are. So Government Affairs and Community Outreach, we have Chairman Fellow, and we have Vice Chair Director Chavez. Admin and Finance, I am the chair of that, and we have Director Trevino as the vice chair. And Water Resources and Facility Management, we have Director Trevino as the chair and Director Garcia as the vice chair. So we will be keeping those committee assignments as they are for the remainder of 2024. Okay, thank you very much. Moving on to item 6, the consent calendar. Can I get a motion and a second?
So moved.
Trevino. Second for Trevino.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Excellent. Moving on to item 7, action discussion items. We have Colorado River 101 presentation with Mr. Bill Hazenkamp. Tom?
Yeah, and I'll do a very brief introduction. Bill Hazenkamp is the manager of Colorado River Resources for the Metropolitan Water District and has been doing this for as long as I can remember. But very knowledgeable and always gives a very interesting perspective on the situation on the Colorado River. So, Bill, take it away.
Thank you for that introduction, and please don't ask me to start with the Star-Spangled Banner. It's great to be in the new boardroom. Very nice here. It was a great drive coming up through the San Gabriel Valley, looking at the white mountains. The river was flowing full. It was green. It was a nice trip out here today. And so I'm going to talk about the Colorado and what's going on. And there's going to be a big announcement coming out next week that you'll hear about, where the lower basin and the upper basin will submit different proposals to the Bureau of Reclamation about how the river should be operated for the next 20 years. There's a big splash. There'll be a lot of media attention on it. So you'll get a heads up today about what to expect, or what you'll get the backstory on that when it comes out. This slide here is also a late developing issue. It was just a nice, my title slide, but this is actually the jet tubes from Glen Canyon Dam. This is how you bypass water to release water out of Lake Powell without having to go through the power plant. And they do that if the water gets low enough, or if they need to have extra flows go through the river. But Reclamation just this morning announced that there's some problems with those jet tubes, that there's cavitation, and they are wary of using them in the future. And if they don't use them, that means that they can only use the power plant bypass to get water out of Lake Powell, which are pretty high in the reservoir. 4.5 million acre feet of water in the reservoir is required to generate power. So if they can't ever use those bypass tubes, it's essentially meaning that there's 4.5 million acre feet of storage that is not available for us in the lower basin. So that's a developing concern that we're still working on. Next slide. But the Colorado River flows through. It's one of my favorite basins in the West. As a kid, I would ski in Vail and mountain bike in Moab, Utah. I still do that. I did that last month and mountain biked last summer. Flows through seven states and two countries before it reaches the ocean, although it actually never reaches the ocean. It's completely dry in Mexico, provides water to 40 million people, 38 Native American tribes, dozens of national parks, wildlife recreation areas. Also one of the most threatened rivers in the world. It gets, I think, though, a bad name. There's been a lot of stories about lake mead at record low levels and climate change impacting the river, and it's unreliable. Yet if you look at the entire western United States, this basin has only had shortages 3 years out of the last 100. And the shortages that they've had have been less than 10%. So that would be like a state water project that you got 100% every year, and then you got a 90% allocation 1 year and you complained. Completely different. This has been an extremely reliable water supply, watershed. And it's the reason that Southern California grew. Metropolitan was formed in 1928 for one purpose, to build an aqueduct to the Colorado River. And that aqueduct has been now going for 80 some odd years and has turned our region into the economic powerhouse that it is today. Yes, we have the State Water Project and the LA Aqueduct for the city of LA, but it's the Colorado that's always been there in times of drought. When we need it, we've turned to it over and over again. It was 102 years ago that the Colorado was divided up when they went to Santa Fe, New Mexico, another one of my favorite little towns to visit. And they divided up the river. And California was able to, because we were developing first, the other states were concerned that California would have the highest right to the river, because in water right law, it's first in time, first in right. So they said, California, you can temporarily use extra water, but the deal is that you don't get a water right for that. When we finally need it back, we'll get it back. So that temporary turned into 50 years, two generations, from 1950, when California fully used its apportionment and more, to 2003, the first year I started working on the Colorado River. And then we had to cut back in California at that time to live within our basic apportionment. We had to reduce our use by 20% permanently 20 years ago. We did that by increasing our conservation here in our service area, ramping up local resources, and paying our agricultural partners in the Imperial Valley, Coachella Valley, Palo Verde Valley to reduce their use through partnerships. And that's helped us live with less water. And that plan worked really well until next slide. A couple years ago, the Colorado River made national news when two really dry years made Lake Mead drop to extremely low levels, the lowest ever since it initially filled. Southern Nevada Water Authority, which is Las Vegas' water supply, their original intake became exposed. Fortunately, they had built a new one deeper down. Human remains were found in barrels in Lake Mead over and over again. In the 1980s, I went to Vegas and I counted cards. And I would fly up and count cards with a buddy. And I lost track of my buddy. And I wonder, maybe he's going to show up in one of these barrels. ghost ships would emerge. Next slide. And it was a concern that reclamation, next slide, please, would commissioner 18 months ago, maybe 20 months ago, said, this has to stop. We can't keep this decline. We need 2 to 4 million acre feet of cuts starting in 2023. Next slide. And it was the ultimate mic drop to a basin that had been so reliable for 100 years. But part of what was going on in the fall of 2022, this is after we've had the worst three-year drought in the western United States history. California's State Water Project had 2.5% allocations. Colorado was dropping. And all of the forecasts, CNN, the Weather Service, were all saying it's a slam dunk. We're going to have another dry year. We're going to have another hot, dry year. And everyone was gearing up for the drought to get even worse. Next slide. And so the other states, I think they panicked. We were trying to work together. The other states sent in press releases in response to the commissioner's call. And those statements, you can't read them, but they all say the same thing. Our state has done more than anyone else, and everyone else needs to do more. Next slide. But California took a different approach. We sent a letter saying we are willing to do more. We did a lot 20 years ago by reducing our use permanently by 800,000. We're willing to step up and do 400,000 a year more through 2026. And Metropolitan was even going to go a step further and say we won't take our ICS, our storage in Lake Mead, out, even though we have a record dry drought here in Southern California. And we were ready to impose mandatory rationing in our entire service area. We already had it in the state project-dependent areas, which were on human health and safety supplies. We were prepared to expand that in our entire service area to help be part of the solution for Lake Mead. Next slide. And the response that we get was painful. Over and over again, not enough, not enough. They all came after California, headline after headline. The relaxing time in my day is when I get my cup of coffee and I sit on my computer and I read the headlines, the news feeds, and it was all negative about California. It was really disappointing after we had put a real offer on the table. Next slide. So then Reclamation said, okay, if you're not going to come up with a plan, we're going to amend these guidelines. And they had given a chance for the seven states to come together with a plan. And again, we didn't come up with a plan, so there was no basin states alternative, which is how this basin has always been operated. From 1922, when the states came together in Santa Fe, states were not on the same page. And six states submitted a proposal. And California said, we're going to do our own proposal. Next slide. And once again, the response was nightmare. Tone deaf California, water guzzling. Here I was thinking, trying to do our part, and we were getting beat up in the media over and over again just a year ago. And it seemed like we were destined for lawsuits and fighting. Next slide. But then two major things happened. One is Congress had approved the Inflation Reduction Act, $4 billion of drought relief in the western United States, where they said the vast majority would be used for the Colorado River Basin. And the vast majority on projects to help prop up Lake Mead. So that was the first thing that happened. And the second thing that happened that nobody saw coming, at least the experts didn't see coming, next slide, the wettest, snowiest winter ever in the state of Utah. In fact, even though everyone was saying it's going to be hot, dry, Utah smashed all records. The upper basin smashed records. Mammoth had its snowiest year ever last year. Hope you got out and got to go skiing last year, because that was one for the record books, of course. And that was a game changer. And so after, and this snow that brought up the reservoirs quickly didn't refill them, but it certainly made a big dent in the drought. The states reevaluated their position. Next slide. And at least the lower basin states came together last May and said, we actually are going to put together a lower basin plan for the short term. And it's going to be, we're going to build on California. California had started with 400,000 a year over 4 years, which is 1.6 million acre foot. Arizona and Nevada put the remaining 1.4 for a total of 3 million acre feet. We've said this, through IRA funding, helps this happen. Plus, the wet year gets us through 2026. So now we can focus on the next generation of agreements. Next slide. Because it was in 2007 that all of the rules on the Colorado were negotiated. It's called the 2007 Interim Surplus Guidelines or Interim Shortage Guidelines. And in 2007, when I took it to our board for approval, seemed like a lifetime. It's almost a 20-year deal. Done. I can go relax. I'll never have to do this again. But somehow 20 years went by quickly, and we're doing it again. And so these guidelines expire at the end of next year. So that's what we're trying to do, is how do we – these guidelines have shortages, have rules for storage, have rules for operations, and it affects power generation, how we're going to share with Mexico, how we're going to fund new programs. So we're developing a plan to address that. Now, the guidelines were extremely beneficial to Metropolitan, extremely beneficial, because they gave us storage in Lake Mead where we could store water. We could take water from the State Water Project in a wet year like last year, store water in Lake Mead, and then in a dry year like 2022, take the water out of Lake Mead and fill the aqueduct and move it to most of our service area. Find out just recently we can't move it far enough, but that's another whole nother discussion. But most of our service area benefited from all of that water. But generally, unless it's those extreme events, everybody benefits from a full Colorado River aqueduct. But there was the perception, public perception, that the guidelines didn't do enough because they didn't have enough shortages and the reservoirs were dropping. Next slide. But I think that perception doesn't match reality, because if you look at the total storage on the Colorado River, reservoirs were essentially full in the year 2000. We had a really bad five-year drought, put the reservoirs at half full. But for the next 15 years, the reservoir stayed essentially flat. It went up and down a little, but no trend. So what we were doing was working. It was working. We were able to put water in and it was working. And then this last, you can see in 2021, 22, those 23, up until 23, those really dry years was when we got in trouble. But now we're headed back up again. So do we need a whole rewrite or a minor tweak? I'm more of the opinion of a tweak, but I lost that. The perception is that the system is completely broken. We need a whole rewrite. But what we are trying to do, however, is keep the reservoirs about that 50% full. You know, people say, when's Lake Mead going to be full again? It's never going to be full again. It was only full because no one was using any water. And so you put in all the storage, Mead and Powell, 60 million acre feet. You're not going to cut use now. Now that all the use is there, and it's just not going to be full. You would have to take too much ag land out of production to fill it up. Why would you do that? So half full is what we're shooting for, which is still 30 million acre feet of storage, still more than all of the storage on the State Project and Central Valley Project combined. But it's the perception is still, that means there's still going to be a permanent bathtub ring on Lake Mead of 120 feet. You know, people will see that. They say that's terrible. Well, there's still, even though the bathtub is down 120, there's still 200 feet below it. That's, people kind of miss that. Next slide. And one of the reasons that we've been able to stabilize the system generally, except for those last couple of years, even though climate change has been drying out the river, is because we have reduced our demands significantly. The start of the century, we were over 8 million acre feet as a lower basin, and we've been on a downward trend, and last year was a record low year, just over 6 million acre feet. And with our plan that we're in place, we're planning on staying at 6 million through 2026. So that's the real, that's what people, the story people miss, and the headlines that miss that we've done a tremendous job. You know, the demands in our service area here for imported water in 2000 were over 2 million acre feet a year from the state and Colorado. Last year it was 1.1 million acre feet. Now, granted, we had a wet year, but still, even without a wet year, it would have been significantly lower. Southern Nevada, Las Vegas is lower. Across the board, it's lower. And the areas are thriving. So you can use a lot less water and thrive, we've seen as a basin. Next slide. But part of the question is, now, how do you plan for a future? Some of the climate scientists are really doom and gloom. Right, it's kind of all over the map. Over the last 100 years, the last century, the runoff was 15 million acre feet. But that included a really wet year in the early part of the century that no one really counts on. So the last 30 years is generally a better number for planning, and that's been about 13.5 million acre foot. It's been the runoff for the last 30 years. But the climate model says there's a lot of uncertainty in the future. It could be as low as 9 or as high as 14. And so Reclamation is planning on using a number of these really dry scenarios, which I think are too dry, partly because these scenarios, if you're going to have a completely different hydrology, it's not going to happen in 5 years, maybe 50 years, but not 5 years. And these new rules are maybe 20 years out. So it's not like we're trying to figure out the ultimate fate of the river. But nonetheless, these new reclamation has decided we're going to be conservative in planning this time around. Next slide. So who's at the table in the negotiations? The negotiations have been going on for a year. We've got another 2 years left in them. The states have a special role because the states are the ones that negotiated the Colorado River Compact in 1922. And each state, each governor sends a representative from his or her particular state. Generally, the representatives would be equivalent to the head of the Department of Water Resources. Anywhere else in California, it would be Carla Nemeth. But the Colorado is, California is different. It's not the head of DWR. It's J.B. Hamby, who is the chair of the Colorado River Board of California. And the Colorado River Board of California is made up of the agencies that get water from the Colorado River, IID, PVID, Coachella, Metropolitan, and then two of our member agencies, San Diego County and the City of Los Angeles, which is sort of weird that we have two of our member agencies on the board that we represent already. But back in the 1930s, when the board was formed, they actually had rights to the Colorado River that became part of Metropolitan, but they retained their seat at the table. So they have a special seat at the table. And then those agencies, along with a couple, there's a total of 10 people. There's two public members and two state members. They elect a chairperson to be the governor's representative, and that's currently J.B. Hamby, who has a 4-year term. This is his second year of that term. But unlike the other states, representatives all have authority to make cuts and reductions, and they can sign agreements. For California, the Colorado River Board doesn't have that authority. J.B. Hamby is more of a figurehead, and you'll see him at the news conference next week saying all these great things on behalf of California, but he has no authority. It's ultimately those Section 5 contractors that control the water rights in California, the same ones, Metropolitan, IID, PVID, Coachella, and the fifth one is the City of Needles, tiny, tiny City of Needles. Those five sign all the agreements, and those are the ones that we're at the table as well, because the Colorado River Board doesn't have authority So we are all there at the table, those other agencies. This time around, also at the table is the 38 tribal representatives. But it's a separate process, and they weren't included in 2007. They weren't happy about it. So now the feds are having a process where they meet with the tribes on a regular basis and the states on a regular basis. Next slide. And then we have a difference between upper basin and lower basin. And part of the challenge is, how do we get the upper basin to participate? If you've read any of the news barbs lately, it's the upper basin has been very antagonistic, saying the lower basin's overusing, the lower basin's problem, they need to step up. What happened in the 1960s is Arizona and California had a long lawsuit over how to interpret the Boulder Canyon Project Act, which divided the waters in the lower basin. And California lost. Arizona won. But what the Supreme Court did is said, we're going to put reclamation in charge of all of the water rights in the lower basin. So the states lost some of their control over the water, and reclamation now took over. So reclamation can enforce the contracts. They can cut back Metropolitan. They can cut back IID. They can't cut back water users in the upper basin because that's all state rights. So they don't have the same authority up in the upper basin. Really, the only thing we have on the upper basin is the compact in 1922, which says upper basin has to release 7.5 million acre feet a year at a minimum to the lower basin. And if they don't do that, we can sue them. But it's not really a federal issue. So we're trying to get them to compromise in this process. Otherwise, we'll go back to the Supreme Court, and this time it will be upper basin versus lower basin. Next slide. So the process for these new guidelines, they started in 2003 with a notice of preparation. And what reclamation has said is, we want alternatives to evaluate in the EIS. And they've said early March, we want your alternatives. And the seven states tried together to work to develop an alternative. We've been meeting regularly with the upper basin and making progress, but it was clear we weren't going to make the deadline. So next week, there'll be a lower basin alternative submit, an upper basin alternative, and probably a lot of barbs back and forth between the two basins. NGOs will likely submit. There's a whole group of NGOs that are going to submit an alternative. And the tribes are going to submit maybe principles. Maybe it's not a full alternative, but something as well. And there could be other groups all coming in next week or the week after. And then what reclamation will do then is figure out do all the analysis for a draft EIS at the end of this year. Metropolitan Board will take action probably in 2025, assuming that we're still working together and still collaborating with our agencies. And the hope is there's still time for a seven-state consensus. We don't want to have to go to court with them. We lost last time we went to the Supreme Court over the Colorado River, so we don't have a good track record. But the hope is, and we heard them today, there was a call earlier today, and we heard all of the representatives in the upper basin and lower basin say, we still want a seven-state consensus. We still want to be in it together. Ultimately, part of the challenge here is, at the end of the year, will we have an administration change? Will we have a new commissioner for the Bureau of Reclamation? What will that do for the process? So there's a lot of uncertainty after December. So it's more vague. So we're really focusing on this draft EIS, and then there's going to be another year or two of a little bit of murky waters. Next slide. So the lower basin proposal that's coming out next week has some key tenets. One is address the supply-demand imbalance with much more aggressive cuts than the prior proposal did. Prior proposal relied on some cuts and then some voluntary actions and some voluntary funding. This is going to get away with that and say, we want to have serious reductions, so everything's going to change for water users in the lower basin under this proposal in 2 years. And that the reductions will be based on total system contents. Under the existing rules, it's based on where Lake Mead level is. And if Lake Mead is more than less than a third full, shortages begin. Our proposal is a more holistic approach, excuse me, of the entire, all the reservoirs in the entire basin would trigger shortages. And there's two types of shortages. There's this structural deficit. Structural deficit is a Arizona word. It's for if the upper basin releases the compact requirements from Lake Powell, which is 7.5 million acre feet, a lot of that water is lost before it gets to Lake Havasu and before it gets to Imperial Dam. Lake Mead itself evaporates 600,000 acre feet a year. Lake Havasu, all those reservoirs evaporate. The total loss is in the neighborhood of 1.5 million acre feet a year. So the lower basin has said, we're going to cover that every single year. So we're going to permanently reduce our use from 7.5 down to 6, unless we get some kind of unheard of wet situation. If it's drier and some of those climate change scenarios come to fruition, then we expect all users in the basin, upper basin, lower basin, everyone to contribute. We don't have a hard plan for that yet. But some way that we're all in this together. And then also we would expand some of the storage programs in Lake Mead that have been so beneficial. And that reduction in the lower basin, California's share is 440,000 acre feet, or a 10% reduction. So California has agreed to cut use by another 10%. We did 20% already back in 2003. We're prepared to do another 10%, which we have to figure out within California how we would live with 440,000 acre foot less. We are doing things like Pure Water Southern California, which would give us an extra 158,000 acre feet. We need to partner with agriculture to spare the pain. Those things we're going to work out in the next year to two. Right now, we're focusing on modeling for the SEIS. Next slide. So for us, our priorities for Metropolitan, and this is the end slide, and it's still developing, and that is one is protecting our senior priority. California does have a senior priority to Arizona in the lower basin. That doesn't mean that we expect Arizona to take all of the reductions. It's actually not the full state of Arizona. It's the Central Arizona Project. We're not saying the Central Arizona Project goes to zero before California takes a shortage. We're saying that we're willing to contribute, but we expect Arizona to take the lion's share of shortages. And then in this proposal that's coming out next week, you'll see Arizona's percentage reduction is almost three times what California's is. We also want to protect the investments that we've made, the $2 billion that we in San Diego and the state of California have made in agricultural programs. We want to make sure those transfers can continue and that somehow they aren't diverted to Lake Mead as part of our reduction, because that's the same thing that's come out of our supply. And we still need to be able to provide a full Colorado River aqueduct in dry years like we did in 2000, 2001, 2002. We also, under those really dry scenarios, need to ensure human health and safety. Hopefully we would never have to go there, but we want to make sure that at least we get a minimum amount of water, and we've calculated that somewhere around 500,000 acre feet of water in the Colorado River Aqueduct would be human health and safety for our region. So that's, but it depends on, obviously, the level of local supply development. Interstate augmentation opportunities. Southern Nevada and CAP have expressed interest in partnering with Pure Water. We think it's a good idea because we could provide them water in wet years on the state project and leave their water in Lake Mead, but then in dry years still take all the water back and fill our aqueduct. So it's a way of offloading water in wet years but still keeping the yield in dry years. And Southern Nevada in particular has said they're willing to spend $1 billion on this. So it's very much in our interest to have that move forward. And then, of course, we're still going to have wild swings on the state project, so we need flexible annual operations. Those are our core tenets moving forward as we enter these negotiations, as continue. We're maybe a third of the way through. Tomorrow is going to, or next week, is going to be a big announcement, but it's really, it'll probably be oversold a little bit, frankly. This is just a step. They want to make a big splash, but it's a step. We still have a lot of hard work to do, figuring out within California how we're going to live, how we're going to share this pain among our ag partners in the normal reductions, and then in those climate change reductions. Even though I think they're extremely unlikely, we're still going to have a plan for it. And, of course, the media likes to focus on, well, look at this worst case. What are you going to do? So we're going to have a good response to that. So my last slide is from Simon Sinek. And when I get down and sometimes thinking, I'll just talk about the past rather than the future, but the challenge of the unknown future is so much more exciting than the stories of the accomplished past. And this is going to be an interesting 2 to 3 years, certainly an unknown future, and hopefully we come out okay on the other side. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was great. Thank you so much. At this time, we'll take questions, comments from the board. Director Trevino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill, in December on the Colorado River users meeting, met with some people from the Central Arizona Project, and they're stating that the Native Americans have roughly 2.8 million acre-feet that they're not using, and they're negotiating with the tribes. Are you aware of that? Where is that at?
Yeah, so the tribal issue is a big one. When the states divided up the rights and the water users, the tribes weren't given water at the time, or a lot of water. Then later, the tribes were given land and water rights. And when they were given water rights, it was generally enough water to irrigate on the land they were given, and maybe more than enough water. You get water to irrigate your land. And in many cases, it's more water than they could use to irrigate the land. Like in California, the Colorado River Indian Tribe owns a lot of land that is not really irrigable, but they have rights to 55,000 acre-feet of water in California that they're not using. They could use, they have the land, but it's just not irrigable. Also, there's tribes in Arizona that have rights to the Colorado River, but the Grand Canyon, they're at the top of the Grand Canyon, and moving it up is difficult. So they're looking for some recognition that their unused water is going to somebody else. And so those are discussions that we've been having. We, with the Kwatsan tribe, we pay for some water that they aren't using. The Crit tribe, we're still in discussions. In fact, our GM and others are meeting with the Colorado River Indian tribes in April, trying to strike a fair balance of recognizing that they have water rights, but they're not using them. So what's a fair deal to negotiate? It's not easy, but it's certainly an issue that has to be addressed.
I might do a follow-up. So we're negotiating with the Crit tribes here in Southern California, because I know we have a group of our employees that are working with the Met employees, rather. So I think that's an important aspect of us trying to find additional water sources. How do you feel about the fact that Central Arizona and the 19 tribes are negotiating on their own for that 2.8 million acre feet? Do we have a say-so in that in terms of if Arizona is able to be successful in that?
All of the tribal rights are within the state allocations. So if a state has an allocation like Arizona's is 2.8 and the tribes have access to 2,
right,
that comes out of everybody else's. right? And it's strictly their state. So they're trying to figure out within their state how to manage the right. So it really doesn't affect us in California. What affects us is the Quatsan, the crit in California.
Right.
And so we're in discussions with them. But generally, each state focuses on the tribes within that state.
What about the Saboba tribe? Are we negotiating with them also, like part of that?
We've already reached a settlement with them to give them water that comes from the Colorado River tunnel.
It goes to the tunnel project.
Yeah, the San Jacinto tunnel. Yeah, there's a number of tribes in our region here, far like San Luis Rey Indian tribe, the Pechanga tribe that we have settlements with, Saboba. Yeah, there's a number here, but they're not really Colorado River tribes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Bill, thank you for coming. And I do want to thank you and Shante Rossetti for the work you do at MET. You're both very impressive and tirelessly working on this. I want to ask you two questions. Even yesterday, Adele was harping on the fact that the other states don't listen to us. He says we've allocated our Colorado allocation of 400,000 acre feet to Lake Mead, bolstering it. And we've done more conservation than any of the states. Why don't they listen to Adele? What's, and MET? They just seem to have a deaf ear.
Well, they know it inside, right? They know it inside. They're in a negotiating mode right now. So they don't want to weaken their negotiating position. If you talk to them offline, they're very appreciative. In the press, it's different. So it is a difficult time now. And that did trigger one thing I forgot in that timeline is that there are times for public process to engage. So we would like your district to engage when we get to the draft EIS. If we have a consensus alternative, maybe a lower basin versus upper basin, we would like supportive comments on our lower basin proposal. Or if we are at complete odds and we're fighting with the other states, things fall apart, we want support also for that. So not just in the draft EIS, but through the final EIS, we're going to need congressional legislation. So we're going to look for support for that, for this to happen. That's probably in 2025 or six. So along the way, there will be opportunities for agencies like yours to help out. And we'll be reaching out as we go through that.
And Bill, do you think in the long run the Arizona will take the lion's share of reductions, or will they continue to balk at that?
Well, the law is on our side. Public opinion is maybe on their side. So far, we've been compromising. We compromised even to we were in Rancho Cucamonga at our Etiwanda facility with Arizona, kind of just 2 weeks ago, finalizing how we're going to share numbers in the static structural deficit. We tried to negotiate, okay, climate change, how are we going to share those? Couldn't get it yet. But they recognize they have to do more than us. Brenda Berman, former Metropolitan employee, is the head of CAP. So she knows MET in and out. So she's a good opponent in these discussions because she knows our issues. But we are having good dialogue with Arizona, not the upper basin, but with Arizona, we're making a lot of good progress. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful we'll get a good outcome.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I really like that quote, when you were giving it with this at the end with the Simon Sinek. There is so much media out there, and it's just so accessible, and it is totally doom and gloom, not just about the Colorado River, but just the future of water and the climate and everything. So, yeah, it's a nice way to put it. The challenge of the unknown future is so much more exciting than the stories of the accomplished past. It's exciting. It's daunting. It's
It is, and so I've been working on the river for 22 years, and we have always succeeded. Like, there's been challenges along the way, and we've always – when I first started, California had to figure out how to reduce our use by 800,000 acre feet, right? And that was right when I started, and I was at a conference, and Jim Lockhead, who was recently the CEO for Denver Water – said, surplus water is the crack cocaine for California. And like any addict, they'll never be able to give it up, right? It's like, wow, right, brand new. And of course we did. A year later, we gave it up and we thrived. And so there's always doom and gloomers out there, but we've always been successful. So I'm optimistic.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear. You mentioned a big announcement coming next week. What agency are we expecting that big announcement from, if you can divulge?
Yeah, so the Colorado River Board of California, the Arizona Department of Water Resources, and the Southern Nevada Water Authority will be holding a press conference sometime next week that will highlight the proposal. And the proposal will be coming out. They're having LA Times, New York Times, all the big there. And it's they're reaching out to everybody. So it's a virtual event. So at the press event won't see that, but you'll see a lot of media on it the next day.
Great.
I would anticipate.
Okay. Great. All right. Thank you very much. Do we have any other questions, comments? Nope. Okay. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. We will be now moving on to information items. We have press releases and news articles in our packet. Next is attorney's report. Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A brief report today. Since the last meeting, we worked on some contracts with Evelyn and staff, specifically the elevator services agreement, worked with Jennifer on the native plant voucher agreement, and the Aqua Academy agreement with Valley County. And other matters, helping Evelyn respond to a subpoena for records from some asbestos litigation, which appears to be regional, that almost every water agency in Southern California is getting requests for records concerning pipeline construction, which is in the past has been a source of asbestos contamination. So we're working with Evelyn on that response. Also worked with Tom on some metropolitan issues and also some PFAS issues that have come up recently that are going to be the subject of our closed session discussion. And that concludes my attorney's report.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next, we have engineer's report. Steve Johnson.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. We do have some things to report, which is kind of fun. For those who came in on the freeway, you saw the spreading grounds have water in them now. So they've been dry for a long time, and they're not full. They're still down, but water is going in, and we do have water in the spreading grounds. And it's been going on long enough now that we do see a reaction in the key well. It's gone up, which it hasn't done for several months now. Because of all that's been going on with the reduction, even when we had water in because of percolation, then we stopped putting water in, and obviously it's not going to go up at that point. But we have turned around. So the key well, as of 26th of February, last Friday, was 222.4. It came up 0.4 of a foot in 1 week. That's good. At least an initial sign. We don't know yet. We certainly aren't going to know for a while. We don't know yet whether we've got full percolation capacity back until we get them full, and we can run it for several months, and we see it. It should take off and skyrocket if we've got full percolation capacity back. But we'll see. So we're back to where we were the prior month. So we picked up what we lost over the whole month, which is good. So we're the same elevation we were a month ago. We're still 35 feet higher than we were the same time last year, which is on the order of almost 300,000 acre feet, more in the basin right now than we had last year. So a lot of good news. We also have a storm coming. They're talking about not just locally. It's not going to be as big as the others. They're calling it another, and I know it's getting old because it's old for me, another atmospheric river. Now we're hearing that term. Anybody have heard this thing? Now they're going to have to come up with something new because that one's getting old. They're calling it an atmospheric river. We don't think it's going to be as powerful as the last two, but I did hear that they're looking for like 10 feet in the Sierras of snow. And that's huge for our state water project entitlement. State water project entitlement up around 35%, roughly 30 to 40%, results in, potential releases by MWD through USG3 for replenishment purposes. And, we can certainly use those and start catching up on that. We have We have depleted the Saclay storage account. All the water they deliver has been paid for. So we're wide open for MWD. And we will be starting to talk with MWD about a new letter agreement with a quantity and a repayment schedule, probably pretty quick. I think doesn't it come out in March or is it April we get a state water project?
I was going to cover that. The next allocation update will be in March. The last one, and they just increased it from 10 to 15%, but that was based on the hydrology through the end of January and the storms. The huge storms, you know, record amounts in 3 days came after that report. So we are anticipating an increase. I tried to get an over-under number for the state project allocation this year for bedding, but I couldn't get that number out of Metropolitan.
Yeah.
But it does look like, you know, it looks very promising that it will get close to that around 30% range or higher where Met will open the spigot for cyclic deliveries to groundwater basins.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, 10 feet in the series is good. That's a lot of snow.
Even if it doesn't, MWD will make firm service deliveries. If we order water and we can pay for it, when we order it, Met will make that delivery.
So some more current stuff. Just in the month of February, we increase storage in our canyon basins because we weren't releasing while a lot of the rain was going on. We increased storage about almost 34,000 acre feet just in the month. It's still going at almost 500 CFS, and that's almost 1,000 acre feet a day. So we're still seeing inflow. So the county is releasing now, but we're going to have more coming in. So we're locally in a pretty good situation that I frankly would not have expected for this year, even though they said it was going to be an El Nino. Having two wet years in a row is very, very unusual, especially since what we've seen the last 15 years. So that's kind of where we're at. More local information in February, just February. At Puddingstone, we received 12 and a half inches of rain. Long-term for the season average is about 17 to 18. So getting 12 and a half inches just in February is pretty amazing. San Gabriel Dam, they got 17 inches just in February. February is not over. It is tomorrow, though, isn't it?
Tomorrow. Yeah.
So,
we got an extra day to try.
But rain won't be here till Saturday, so it won't count toward February, but we are getting more rain coming. Interesting, as part of the package, we always provide the graph of rainfall for the year, which includes the average. It's in the engineering package.
I haven't been getting those for a couple of agendas, actually. I don't know if anybody else has. Yeah.
We'll make sure, yeah. When you do, one of the ones to look at, which I thought was interesting when I saw it, is for Puddingstone. I pulled it out. For Puddingstone, it does show, and what it shows, so people can see it, what it shows, the average is the bar right there. That's the long-term average. It shows last year where it went all the way up to here, and you can see the dark one. That's this year. We just crossed over total rainfall this year more than last year at this time, which I think is just amazing because last year was just crazy wet, and we're seeing that much this year. So very surprising. I would never have expected, because I don't believe the weather guys anyway when they talk about rain. I didn't believe them when they said it was going to be dry last year, and it was very, very wet. Then they said it's going to be wet again this year, and I said, come on, guys, it's not going to happen. Well, it's happening. So you always learn something new. Lastly, we have total rainfall for the year. Puddingstone Dam, we're at about 19.6, which is above long-term average for the whole year. So we're about 150% of long-term average just for this time of year. San Gabriel Dam, it's about 37, almost 37 and a half inches, again, which is more than the long-term average for the entire year. And it's about 100, almost 150% of long-term average for this time of year right now. So we're doing very well. Lastly, Title 22, water quality. Under the Water Master Administrative Assessment, during January, 52 wells were sampled under Title 22. During December, 8 wells were sampled, and we didn't receive any new notices of a well shut down due to water quality. And just for the board's information, we are still working with the Water Master to get the PFAS memo, which reviews the results of the PFAS testing throughout the entire basin, to get that released by the Water Master. I'm asking for it, and noting that Chairwoman Santana has asked for it before. I have talked to Tony at Watermaster, and he said that he would be talking to you directly about when he's going to have that ready. Because I can't keep asking him, but I'm just going to put you two together. So, sure. So that's where we're at. It should be out soon, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
A couple of questions. So the big rainstorm, is that this Friday and Saturday coming up?
I think Saturday, Sunday. They've moved it a little bit, but it could be Friday through Saturday or Sunday or Monday.
Yeah, in fact, what was it? 2 days ago, I was going to cut the grass. I didn't know it was going to rain, and then it started raining.
Yeah.
So it's the opposite of what they said on the news.
Yeah, they did say that we had a chance on Monday, and they said it was going to be light. We got more than just light.
Yeah.
Just on that. Yeah. And I've turned my sprinklers on and off about four times in the last 3 weeks. So.
I just released my water barrel to make sure it's empty for this weekend. So. Yeah. So everything's them. So I had a question about the Colorado River, and I should have asked Bill when he was here. And I don't know if you know Steve. So I was at I was in Laughlin last month, up on Riverside, 10th, 12th floor, looking down at the river. It was very shallow.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see the bottom of it. And then as a river, you usually go to the edges and there's the water, but the water was so low. On some areas, it looked like beachfront property, like sand, which you never seen that. So I didn't know if it was a lack of water or deliveries. They shut off some valves or something like that. I haven't been there in several years, so I was kind of shocked to see the low.
I don't know for that specific event. They do fluctuate flows for various reasons, but I will tell you that that area is known for shallow, for boats and things. It's kind of shallow. It's the river flows very fast through there, and it's pretty shallow for boating. The other thing to note is that, and because where I go out to the river, it's downstream. It's down around the Parker area.
Yeah,
and I think I've mentioned this before, but as a result of the quagga mussel getting in the Colorado River and infesting the Colorado River, the clarity of the Colorado River water has improved tremendously. I mean, I go out onto the river at Parker where I used to, I haven't done it for a while, but I do like stand up paddling when it's not very busy. And I can now go across the entire river and see the bottom across the entire river. Uh-huh. And it's on full flow. I can see it clear as if it was only 2 feet deep. It's that clear. So to be able to see the bottom, a lot of that has happened to do with the quagga mussel because they're eating up all of the minerals and sediment.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask what time of day did you take a peek at the level? Was it the morning, early in the morning, or because it changes
during the daytime? I don't know.
Okay,
I was there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
We've stayed there, and in the morning they turn off the valves, and it's super low, and then it'll ramp up in the from where we have stayed. Yeah,
they release water to generate power for power periods.
Yeah,
so during the day you can see. At night it's low. And then
they release the water so the generators
can. When electricity use is high, they'll turn on the generators to match the electrical demand.
Some of the boaters have to be aware of that when they beach their boats because if it's the wrong time, they're not going to get them off the beach when the water goes down. Yeah. So they got to adjust for that.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Steve, speaking of quagga mussels, yesterday Adele was talking about he thinks there may be a threat to quagga mussels in the State Water Project.
There has been a threat since they were found. There have always been threats.
They found an established colony at Castaic Lake.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. They're reproducing at Castaic Lake.
Oh, wow.
That's not good.
That's more money. And also yesterday I was reading it, Matt, that if we had the site's reservoir, it would be filled right now. And that'd be 500,000 acre feet. Yeah.
Between last year and this year, you bet.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
You bet.
Thank you. Moving on to general manager's report, Tom.
And before we start that, I just wanted to check with Vanessa. So on the written engineer's report, we put that in the first meeting packet of the month, not the second. Okay. But we've also abbreviated it. We now have a two-page version of that.
Yes.
So you should be getting it not in this package, but on the first meeting of the month. If you would like, we can include it in both. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. And even the abbreviated package has those wells in the back. Rainfall.
So since question on quaggas came up, we will be starting to do our annual review and update of our quagga mussel control plan for the potential delivery of Colorado River water to the spreading grounds. We want to keep that plan fresh. We hope we never have to put it into effect and use it. But in the event something happens and we get back-to-back-to-back very low state project allocations, we want to make sure we have that plan ready to go in case we do need to take it to Colorado River delivery. So we'll be working on that. And so on the what we did learn in that plan, and it's relevant to Castaic Lake, is we know the state project calcium level, and calcium is critical to the formation of the shells of any mollusk like a quagga mussel. Calcium levels below roughly 18 to 20 milligrams per liter are not really conducive to the growth of quagga populations. Above 20, moderately, and then you get above 30, and they are conducive and will allow quaggas to grow. So the state project calcium levels are generally below 20. In dry years, it actually goes up a little bit. We also assume that the water behind Morris Dam was low in calcium. It's rainwater. Well, it's higher. It's about 60 milligrams per liter. And it's because of the geologic formations up there have some limestone, and hence calcium gets in the water. The same situation as at Castaic. Even though the water in Castaic has come from the State Water Project, it has moved through that geology. And if you've driven up the 5 and you see the formations, you can see the limestone, the whitey, more whitish rocks. And so I don't know what the calcium levels are in Castaic, but they are high enough, apparently, to support a quagga population. So that is a concern. It's a concern with other spreading operations of state project water from that side of the system. A number of years ago, I think it was 2017, they found quagga villagers in the East Branch delivery of the State Water Project. In other words, the water that comes to USG3, they found some villagers in that. The villagers are the larval form, but they never found adult quaggas. They tested. We actually suspended delivery of water through USG3 when they found that. So the quaggas will continue to be a concern. They're spreading. They're expanding nationwide. But it's just something they're going to have to deal with. But I hadn't heard that the water's clear. There, maybe we could claim treatment credits for the quaggas cleaning up the water. So I already mentioned State Water Project allocation just went up to 15%. We do expect it to go higher. The storm that Steve mentioned coming through Southern California, it actually looks really stronger for Northern California, as he mentioned. So right now, if you look at the charts today, Northern California precipitation is about 90% of average for this time of year. But this storm could easily bring it up to 100%. And so Steve has his rain gauges. I've got my rain gauges. Locally, we're well over 100% for this time of year. We're actually close to 100% for the entire water year. So it's looking good. So I know Director Fellow, let's see, I don't know if we have, no, we don't, it's only the first meeting we do the MWD report. But there has been now 3 MWD budget workshops. One was to the board yesterday. One was with the member agency managers today. I did mention it, I think, at our previous board meeting, and we will give our finance committee, a detailed briefing on the MET budget coming up. And there are some interesting alternatives to deal with what the staff are showing as a 13% plus 8% water rate increases over the next 2 years. So they're looking at some interesting alternatives, including increasing their ad valorem tax rate to offset some of the impact on the water rates. Tomorrow is a long workshop for the Camp for Water Task Force, and hopefully it sounds like they will be trying to get that task force to define what they're calling time-bound targets that are more specific goals that MWD needs to try and achieve in terms of developing X amount of new water supply, X amount of new storage, or flex supplies to meet the supply gaps identified in the IRP findings, the scenario CED, if you recall those scenarios of, you know, we need at least 15,000 acre-feet more water. Maybe we need 200,000 acre-feet of more water. So hopefully they'll be putting some numbers to those. And they are trying to have their first annual report prepared in April, a draft report in April, that will identify those time-bound targets so we can begin looking at project portfolios to meet those goals. So I'm hopeful that it's so far it's been a lot about the process of how to work together with 26 member agencies and 30 MET board members to try and come to a consensus on solutions, but we've really only talked about the process of getting there. We haven't talked about the solutions yet, so I'm hopeful that we will start getting to solutions that we can start to debate and discuss within the metropolitan family. And with everything going on at MET, I did send the directors an email yesterday. The San Gabriel Valley MWD directors and working with their general managers, so that's Foothill Municipal Water District, City of Pasadena, City of San Marino, ourselves Upper District, and Three Valleys Municipal Water District, is for a strategic policy advisor related to metropolitan issues. And we went through a number of different names of colleagues that we've worked with or known over the years, a former CFO, Chief Financial Officer of MET, who had a conflict because they're doing some work for MET and others. But we have settled in on to hire Jeff Keitlinger, former General Manager of MET, for that strategic policy advice. Foothill Municipal Water District Board has approved the contract with Jeff. And then what we will do, and I will sign under my authority, is a cost-sharing agreement for our share, which will be $25,000. So that budget should get us through the end of this calendar year. And then later on in the year, we'll evaluate whether we need to continue those services or need different kind of services or any at all. So I just wanted to inform the board that I will be signing that cost-sharing agreement to move forward with that policy advice support for our MWD directors. We had a phenomenal tour on Friday for Assemblymember Pappin, the chair of the Water Parks and Wildlife Committee. Assemblymember Blanca Rubio was on the tour. State Senator from the LA area, just west of us here, was on the tour. We had a couple of regional water quality board members on the tour, and I think it was a really good success. And we got a lot of accolades from the electeds on how impressed they are with how we work together as agencies here in the San Gabriel Valley to solve our water problem. So I think it's going to pay a dividends when we go to Sacramento and talk to them about legislation or our issues. So it came off really, really well. And lastly, so last week I had to cut it short because of the tour and some other reasons. I did go out to the Urban Water Institute in Palm Springs. It's always a good conference for directors and for our retailers. I would encourage them to go as well. But it was fortuitous that on Wednesday night I was invited to a dinner by Rich Nagel, who some of you know. Rich used to be the general manager of West Basin. And I was sitting at the table, and sitting next to me was a guy 6'7". He works for the county, Public Works. His name is Russ Braden. He will be the next executive director of the Water Master. And so Russ and I hit it off. We had a very good conversation. And I promised him I would never get in a fight with him because he's a big guy. But so look forward to working with Russ. And I know they haven't approved the contract yet within the Water Master Board, but they did make that announcement out of closed session at the last meeting. So I do look forward to working with Russ.
And that was a closed search. They don't have to do an open search for that. But you know the gentleman for many years, don't
you? Yeah. Well, I've known him, but I haven't really worked closely with him. But after having dinner and a glass of wine, I like him a lot. We'll see when we actually sit down face-to-face and try and do business together. But I think we'll be able to work with him very well.
That's great. All right. Any comments, questions? All right. Thank you, Tom. Next, we will move on to director's comments. Director Trevino.
Don't have any comments, okay. Madam Chair.
Director Chavez?
Regarding the tour with Pappin and Rubio, that was a great tour. There were some locations that I've never been to, and it was very informative, even for us. So it was good that everybody was engaged in it. And in fact, there where the rubber dam was, I was looking at it, and Senator Durazo cornered me, asked a lot of good questions that luckily I had some answers to, but she was really engaged and really excited about learning what was going on, and because she didn't really ask a lot of questions to the speakers, and then she felt comfortable to ask me, and it was nice to know that that interest is there. So that tour was great. I want to my hat off to Patty over there. I know the night before she was putting all the logistics together, as well as our supportive staff. So that was a good thing. Just one fun fact, and I'll keep this brief. So with all this rain that we've been getting, I've been getting comments from, you know, my friends. They all the time it rains, or there's something about water. You know, I'm their water guy, so they always, bring something up or give me a little jab. And with all this water, I heard it twice, so I had to bring it up. The comment that they said, and they said, they used to say there, you know, it never rains in Southern California. And that is a reference to a song that came out in about 1972, Albert Hammond, One Hit Wonder Guy. That song, and they always play it sometimes on the news, like, hey, it never rains in Southern California. That song has nothing to do with water. Nothing to do with water. It's about a guy, an artist, a singer coming to California and thinking he was going to make it big in the recording industry and movie industry. And he thought it was going to be raining contracts, raining opportunities. And he failed. And he said it never rains in California. Not water. It was more of a metaphor. But and in the song, he really failed. He became homeless. And someone from his hometown saw him, and he said, please tell the people back home that I made it, which he never did. So that's the lyrics of the song, though. Sad but it's a sad story. It's a nice, fun song, but yeah, it's a sad ending.
Yeah.
That's it.
Thank you. Director Garcia.
I think he'd be an excellent trivia partner, Director Chavez. I wanted to say it, but then he left. But I love that presentation. I'm such a nerd, and I love all of the history. I'm curious more about, like, all the Supreme Court cases between the states. So if that's ever something that we can talk about, I'd be interested in hearing that. So, but again, wonderful presentation. So very engaging. Like, I was very impressed, actually, with how engaging he was, and I loved all the photos, especially the poker table. I don't know if anybody else noticed that.
Yes. It was a poker table. I was going to ask him that too. It's like, so when all the people are sitting at the table, do you know who's bluffing and who has a higher hand on that table?
Anyway, but I just wanted to say that I appreciate that, so yeah. Thank you.
He's a good guy. Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful man.
All right, Director Fellow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I came today, I did get a call from Met saying if I would introduce you at the next Met meeting, because Tom will be our guest GM.
I'm waiting for them to tell me that I'm going to be the next guest GM.
You are. So. I said, no, I'm not going to introduce
them. And so this is some, and if you don't mind me, so something that the chair at Don Ortega has started doing is he's invited one member agency general manager to sit up the board table during the board meeting. Mm-hmm. Now, can't vote, but to actually engage in the dialogue and discussion with the board. And so apparently my turn's up March 12th. But I've been thinking about what I'm going to talk to them about. But one thing that I think is fascinating as we went through our 60-year history is looking at when we were formed and the people that were involved who were also involved in the formation of West Basin and Central Basin and the water masters and the water replenishment district. And I haven't fact-checked this, but I'm pretty sure it's true. I'm going to let them know that Upper District had the first female general manager of any of the Met member agencies, Jane Bray, 1974, yep. I believe, was the date. But tell them about our history and our relationship back then with those agencies. But then to tell them about what we've accomplished here in the San Gabriel Valley with groundwater cleanup, what the county does with stormwater capture, what artwork has done with recycled water. We've used all the water out of the local recycling plants and our conservation programs, how dramatic those have been. So I think we have a great success story here to tell in the San Gabriel Valley. I think we have achieved one water.
wastewater, stormwater, water conservation, and groundwater cleanup. We've done a really good job. I say we, but it's the collective of this board, our former board members, and all of our stakeholders and partnerships in the region. So I want the metropolitan people to know that. I think it's really important they recognize that, you know, we're just not sitting up here in the valley on our hands. We've actually done a lot, and in some cases a lot more than a lot of the other region in Southern California has done. So I think it's important they recognize that. Sorry, you got me off on my soapbox.
I'm glad you talked about – I love talking about Jane Bray. She became a very good friend of mine when I first got on the board. And I just – and along with that, when speaking of friends, I hate to see Tony Zampiello go.
I think he'll be around in a while. But
yeah, but I've enjoyed working with him tremendously. He's been great to me. And every time I needed advice or information, I shall miss him. The MWD, as Tom said, did meet yesterday for a budget workshop, a special meeting of the board and an executive committee. It was all day. And they will also be meeting tomorrow for, looks like, a very lengthy session on budget planning. And we have four or five more budget workshops that we have to go through. I do want to just mention that I'd like to adjourn today in memory of my mother, Mary Jo Fellow, who died Sunday, Sunday. Just 2 weeks before her 95th birthday, so she lived a long time. But I have to tell you something about Ed. I don't know, Ed, if you know my mother. She knows you, and she voted for you. She was a good Democrat till Hillary ran. Then we had problems. I do want to thank the city councils. I'm just very heartfelt, the city councils that I represent. Many of them sent flowers already. But my mother was an amazing person. I always called her a lioness because her children, she would kill for her children. And my mother had a problem in the sense that when I got involved in politics, particularly on the she knew a lot of the people when I first came on this board, Marv Saichi, Ken Manning. On city council, and she was very active when I was young. She got rid of pinball machines in El Monte. She thought that was bad for kids. That was her big thing. But my mother had a habit. You know, Ed, on the city council, you knew the mayor when I got elected. And she was who wasn't the nicest person to work with. And she would say some comments. My mother would call her the next day. And this was not the first time. And I said, Ma, you can't do that. And she said, no one says that about my child. I don't care who it is. And so that was one of her faults. But she was a very good woman. I shall miss her. And that's life. She's in heaven, and that's our destiny and our goal. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Fellow. I really don't have any comments other than it's very nice to be around adults. I appreciate your time around adults because I very much appreciate these times. And that's all I have to say. All right. Our next item, future agenda items. Do we have anything? No. Next, we will adjourn to closed session right now.
That's correct, Madam Chair. Pursuant to Government Code Section 549.56.919 about potential litigation.
Okay. Can we will resume the meeting right now?
Sure. I'll report out from closed session, Madam Chair, that the board met pursuant to Government Code Section 549.56.9 to discuss one item of potential litigation. The board had a discussion and gave instruction to staff. That concludes my closed session report.
Thank you. Okay, and now we will adjourn in memory of Mary Jo Fellow. That ends the meeting. Thank you.